B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
And welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Wednesday, May 1st, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, on this week's social media question, we ask you what you feel is the most important element of a single-player game. We'll read some of your answers and share our own responses. That discussion will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. Over the past 6 months, we've been seeing the beginnings of a partnership forming between Nintendo and Microsoft, with the recent release of Cuphead on the Switch, as well as rumors of services like Game Pass making its way to the Switch. We've got to wonder what the future could hold for these two gaming giants.
Yeah, so it's worth noting that this partnership is one that actually used to exist pretty well. Throughout most of the 2000s, Rareware was still developing titles for the DS, despite being owned by Microsoft. So this is actually a partnership that once did exist, and it wasn't until the HD remake of GoldenEye that there was a huge disagreement about who owned the rights to that, where Microsoft and Nintendo really kind of split.
Wow. I actually didn't know that that was the rift.
A little bit of gaming history for you there. But what we're starting to see is, we've now seen Cuphead releasing for the Switch. We're hearing more and more rumors about more games that Microsoft is developing going to the Switch. We've even heard bubblings of Game Pass eventually making its way to the Switch. Now, Xbox's boss, Phil Spencer, he kind of threw fuel on the fire to that, and then reports started coming out that might not be the case. No one's confirming one way or the other, but it's kind of opened up this conversation. What would a partnership between Nintendo and Microsoft look like today?
Well, I think that that's a really interesting question, specifically because of the market position that Microsoft is in.
Exactly.
This would be hugely beneficial to Microsoft, and they've got to do something.
Well, it's beneficial to Nintendo as well, but Nintendo has all the bargaining power.
Nintendo has way more of the market share than Microsoft does. Let's be honest here.
So it's Microsoft.
They have way more to bring to the bargaining table.
Well, it's Microsoft that would have to go to Nintendo, you know, hat in hand, saying, you know, hey, please let our stuff be on your platform, because if this next console tanks, Microsoft is done.
Well, here's the thing. Microsoft, obviously, as a company, is just fine.
They just became
the third company to ever reach $1 trillion valuation.
Yeah, they're fine.
But I think here's where I agree with you. I think what we're about to see might be the last hardware cycle of Microsoft. Obviously, we're going to get a big presentation with some new hardware at E3.
They could kind of go the way of what Sega
did. With Nintendo firmly holding the mobile and the handheld and the casual market, PlayStation 5, if history is any trend, is going to win the next cycle of hardcore gamer. Does it not behoove Microsoft to start looking at maybe taking a software stance? Because Game Pass, by every statistic we've seen, is doing fine.
It's doing really well. I think it does. Like, I think that that's something that's a part of the market where Microsoft could really see some growth. And they let's be honest, they haven't seen nearly any growth in their hardware division for the last two generation cycles. Like, you know, like Xbox 360 did well enough.
It did well enough to compete.
To justify the Xbox One.
It did.
The Xbox One did not, especially when you kind of stack up the numbers against the PS4 and how almost record-breaking those are.
It's so funny to think about, like, how much hubris that the, you know, Xbox division of Microsoft had going into the announcement of Xbox One, because Sony really kind of were on their back heels, and, you know, they announced it that the console was $100 cheaper, third, you know, all the you can share your games kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is that now that we've seen this generation play out, and, you know, PS3 was able to catch up a little bit to the 360, we haven't seen a generation in which Microsoft got clobbered this hard.
And just as a reminder of how bad this was, most of the retailers in Japan didn't even stock Xbox One S's.
They didn't. And I mean, it's worth noting too, when people talk about Microsoft, whether they're being complimentary or, you know, critical of them, you never hear, hey, they don't make good games.
That's very true.
That's not a criticism.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that, you know, games like Halo would be a welcome addition to a PlayStation library. And I think that, you know, a Switch library.
Or a Switch library.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. If Microsoft goes to a strict software stance, then
they'd be dumb not to get in on PlayStation.
They would be really, really short-sighted to not do some kind of deal with Sony. And I think that we start to see what the new video game landscape starts to look like, if that is indeed the case, if we start to future cast 5 or 10 years mm-hmm. into the future. And I think that, you know, with the malleability of software, that it is no more possible than today. There's no reason not to do it. And I think, you know, is anyone really going to be that heartbroken if even the Microsoft stands at this point are probably not going to be that heartbroken if they don't get another piece of hardware? Because most, I think that there is a big overlap in the Venn diagram of PC owners, like gaming PC owners, and those that own Xboxes.
Look at if they put Xbox Live on both PS4 and Switch, let's say. They put Game Pass on PS5, and then their game streaming we know game streaming is a major thing that they're focusing on in the next generation. They put their game streaming software on the Switch to allow the Switch to play high-end Microsoft stuff. That could be a huge win for literally everyone in the gaming industry.
Absolutely.
And on top of that, here the thing is we still don't know what effect that Google Stadia is going to have on the market.
That's going to be a huge disruptive force.
Is going to have on the market. So at this point, if Stadia comes in and is even remotely successful, that's even another part of the pie that's taken out of Microsoft. So at this point, I think Nintendo is intelligent for them to partner with, because Nintendo has so much market saturation, but at the same time, there is history there. There's not so much animosity as there was between Sony and Microsoft. So it is positive for them to partner with Nintendo from a software standpoint, because there is history there, and there's not so much animosity as there was between Microsoft and Sony. So right now, this probably is the best play for them.
And of course, this is all speculation. We don't know what Microsoft has planned. Maybe they are planning on releasing a new hardware console every year for the next 10 years. But I think at this point, the numbers have to be starting to bear out that people aren't willing to upgrade their Microsoft console every year or every other year. At some point, I don't want to say they're doomed to become third party or be a software developer, but at the same time, Microsoft, you guys are a great software company and have been for a long time. Why wouldn't you?
Well, and history tends to repeat itself, and the company that, you know, takes that kind of distant third position, like Sega has in the past, has seen success and indeed a lot of profitability by taking the hardware aspect out from their business model and focusing on software. And to your point, Joe, they do excellent software work. So we'll have to see what the future will bear out. But
plus, we might finally get Master Chief and Smash.
That would be kind of cool. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Do you think that there is a potential partnership brewing between Microsoft and Nintendo? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Ahead next, we'll welcome in Voice of the People, Sarah Skopic, to share your responses to this week's social media question. This week, we ask you what you felt the most important elements of a single-player game are. Stick around. That discussion is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the sports beat of East Texas, 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, and 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com, and while you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and a zip code, so sign up today. at CheckpointXP.com. You can also follow us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint underscore XP on Instagram, so that you can respond to our weekly social media question. This week, we ask you what you feel the most important element of a single-player game is, and we got some great responses that I'm really excited to read here on the show. But before we get to your responses, I got to kick this around the room a little bit. And Robbie, I'm going to start with you. What do you think the most important element of a single player game is?
There are obviously a lot of things that go into making a game great, right? But for me, to keep me coming back, keep me invested, and to keep me playing, it's got to be narrative and characters. Even if you have the best gameplay, it's not going to keep people around, which is evidenced by something like, Apex Legends.
Mm-hmm.
A monumentous start, good gameplay, but if there's no carrot on the end of that stick, doesn't matter how fun the stick is. And for me, the carrot is characters and narrative.
Interesting.
I dig it.
I like that response. I think I would fall very similarly into that category where, you know, for me, it's less about the way that the game plays and more about the story that it's trying to drive at. If there's some kind of emotional connection.
Chase.
Yeah, if there's some kind of emotional connection that I have with the story that's being told, that's a really good incentive. Although, I do have to admit that, you know, well-made pieces of armor and weapons that are aesthetically pleasing.
I'm sorry, what?
Are also...
He's talking about glamour.
What? Who?
Hugely
he's talking about glamour.
Attractive.
Who are you?
Glamour.
He's talking about glamour.
Come on, man. You can't deny that
glamour
that's a huge
is the in-game
motivating factor in most games. Maybe not single-player games.
Nah, even in single-player games.
I mean,
games.
Even in single-player... I'm less motivated by them in single-player games than multiplayer
games. The look on Robbie's face is beyond priceless right now. He's shocked.
Yeah. But you got... Listen, as long as it's well-designed and you know, aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah,
I think it's got to tick those two boxes.
So for me, it's a little bit more general and hard to put your finger on it, but it has to make me feel like I need to feel like, and whether that's because of the story or the characters or just because of how my decisions affected things.
Sure.
I need to come out of it having had kind of that visceral experience.
You ain't deep. You ain't deep. I need to feel something.
I need to feel it. Yeah, I mean, because like you can have games that have a really good story, but like if it doesn't make you have an emotion, like BioShock,
then is it a good story?
Maybe that's hard to say. BioShock, it had the shocking moment, and I felt in that moment like stunned and a little betrayed. Like as long as it makes you feel something, I think it's a good game. Good
all right, game. All right. Even if it makes you feel hate.
Hate's an emotion.
Dark Souls is the perfect example of that. I hated
feeling.
That game before I could love it.
Right, and it's hard to look at Dark Souls and say, yeah, it had a gripping narrative. It really doesn't.
No, but it
made me feel something.
But it does have a very enigmatic narrative.
It does.
Which is also another really good motivator. Norris, what about you?
I'm definitely going to have to say a combination of two things. One would be writing, and the second would be the gameplay loop. And what I mean by gameplay loop is how often can I repeat a...
Replayability,
sure. But there's a specific gameplay loop. Monster Hunter has a very specific gameplay loop of go, fight this, get materials, make stuff, go back out, fight stronger
Fallout stuff. Fallout 76 has a very similar sort of thing, and I'm noticing the pattern more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, even though I'm picking up on the pattern, I still get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Don't be weirded out by that. There's a reason Monster Hunter games have done well since the beginning of time.
Exactly. And of course, then the writing. There's a reason why I love Persona 5 so much.
Sure.
I felt like it was some of the best RPG writing that we've seen in entire generations. So that as well.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on Jack Sports on 1010 XL in Jacksonville, Florida, and ESPN Radio 99.3 FM in Fort Myers, Florida. We're currently going over our social media question. We ask you, you know, what you felt the most important element of a single-player game is. And before we get to your responses, you got to hear from Voice of the People, Saroscopic. What do you think the most important element of a single-player game is?
This is such a hard question because everyone kind of took what the answers I automatically think of, you know, the characters, the story, the writing. So I'm going to take an answer that maybe is not the most important, but is very important to me, and that is resolution. I not every game is like this, and that's fine, but I am very much drawn to and very much prefer single-player games that have some kind of resolution at some kind of ending to their game, even if it's going to go on to sequels levels, or even if you can still play after, just some kind of
resolution. Don't leave the ending vague, basically.
Beginning, middle, end.
You must struggle with the Assassin's Creed series.
I mean, I played number one when I was like 16, and that was the biggest struggle.
All right, let's take a look at our responses coming in from social media.
Over on Facebook, we have Tyler, who says, "The art of discovery. Nothing beats the experience of playing a brand new game, the game giving minimal guidance, and having to figure things out as the player. It creates an immersive experience that helps keep the players invested."
I love that.
I love that. Yeah, no, that is something that I wish online games would do more when they add new content. It's always, you know, the player is so directed towards the content.
Yeah.
I always like to find it on my own. So, well,
and I think this answer is becoming more and more prominent, too, as more games have a sandbox element to them and
absolutely
become more open world.
We have Theodore, who says, "Feeling like your character is at the fulcrum of the story and your choices mean something. Basically the opposite of a good MMO, where you want to feel like there is a whole world existing beyond you."
That's actually a really good point, because
And a good distinction,
yeah, because you do want that in a single player story. You don't want to feel like a cog in a machine in a single player story.
FF12, I don't want to feel like Vaughn, who's just online game,
right,
where I kind of do want to feel
being,
like part
being
of the
an
world
observer of somebody else's story.
Exactly. Perfect example.
We have Rob, who says, "For me, it's pacing. The game can have an awesome story, but if I have to kill trash for too long, or if there's a poor puzzle placement, it can make me put down a game and forget about it."
I really love these answers. These are some very well thought out and varied answers that I wouldn't have even thought of. I love that.
I would never have considered pacing, but it's a great answer.
It is. Think about how many games you've played that have not gotten pacing correctly.
And there's that one part where it turns into a slog. You put it down and never pick it back up. It happened.
Go.
You know what got pacing right and perfect? The latest God of War.
Yep.
Perfect pacing.
Over on Twitter, we have Anthony, who says, "Just simply, it being fun. If it's not fun first, why would I care about a story or any other aspects of the game?"
See, and this is why I tell people why I love Dynasty Warriors games. Because they're fun to me. They're stupid. They're ugly.
They're super dumb, and I keep playing them every time.
But they're fun. That's all that matters.
It's the gold standard of gaming. The games like Madden continue to sell because at the end of the day, you can sit down with your buddies and play football. It's fun.
Over on Instagram, we have Dawes52, who says, "If you can identify with the protagonist, a story is always compelling when you can see yourself in their shoes."
You know how hard that is for somebody like me?
Well, listen.
That failure, bro.
Representation matters. Like, there are so many characters that I feel like I connect to
Grizzle
for no good
man.
Yes, for no good damn reason. So yeah, no, I just really I want to reiterate again, representation matters.
We have Jerry Elizondo, who says, "Good story and music."
Music is a big one.
Music is huge.
Music
is huge.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're gonna have to leave the discussion right there, but make sure you follow us over on social media so that you can make your voice heard on next week's social media question. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. And if you enjoyed this week's social media question, make sure to head on over to our website over at checkpointxp.com, where Robbie's put together a list of his all-time favorite single-player games. But that's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. I want to thank my crew, lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.